Thank you so much for that. And good afternoon to everyone. I am happy to announce that Bill Gates and I have donated $28 billion to charity this year. It's true. I also have the opportunity to let you know that Michael Jordan and I have scored over 40,000 points combined playing basketball. And Tiger Woods and I have shot approximately 19 holes in one. I say approximately. I was in Jekyll Island one year and playing golf. I was 150 yards away from the hole, and I hit this drive that went way off to the right and disappeared deep into the woods. I heard this clunk, and it hit a palm tree and ricocheted way out, landed on the fairway, kept rolling, and then went down this long sloping green, 90 feet and into the cup. So, it's amazing what you can do when you're in partnership with a pro or somebody that's really, really capable. Everything that I claimed was true, but it didn't tell the entire story. I mean, on the physical plane, I can't be considering myself on par with Michael Jordan and Bill Gates and Tiger Woods. But on the spiritual plane, God, who has all power, omnipotent, omniscient, He's chosen to be our partner. He's chosen to partner with us. He gives us work to do, as He's done with His people throughout every century, and He's always given us the wherewithal, the means to be able to do it. And the end result is that He wants to be our partner. And hopefully we want to be His partner in doing a great end-time work. By partner, I mean one who shares, a partaker, one who is associated with another, especially in the activity that accomplishes something, something significant. And God has chosen to partner with us. I'd like for us to turn to some very familiar scriptures that entail a great deal of work for us here in the end time. In Matthew chapter 24 and verse 14, for example. Matthew 24 and verse 14. Fundamental to our calling, because as we've known for some time and discussed, we were called to do a work, not just to have opportunity for salvation, but also to do a great end time work. And that's all-encompassing. Matthew 24, verse 14. This was prophesied by Christ Himself when it says here, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached unto all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come." Along with that, we see the other part of the end-time commission to the church in Matthew 28, chapter 28, verse 18 through 20. "And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go you therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the age." And that certainly is again, all-encompassing. It is a lot of work. And it is impossible for us to expect to be able to do that without help. When you consider the fact that we live in primarily a secular society where there is so much anti-religious activity, or even in certain worlds of religion in other nations and continents, that there's a bias against Christianity and the Bible, to be able to go to all nations, why, that would be a literal impossibility without God's help. And yet, if you look at the story of God working with His servants in the past, you realize that He would give them the ability, in Ezekiel maybe, to have the head of flint, or Moses to overcome stuttering and be confident in front of Pharaoh, or Elijah to be able to overcome his ups and downs of his life, to be able to stand up to the prophets of Baal and to Jezebel, finally, and to King Ahab. These things were not accidental. These are things because there was a partnership relationship going on, that the senior partner, God, who was all-powerful, was able to supply whatever the junior partners needed. And I don't know of anybody that's ever been in the service of God that's done anything significant that did not know that he or she had a great power, a great senior power that could make things happen. And we saw some of that last week when we rehearsed some of the famous lessons of the day of Pentecost and discussed how very powerful the Holy Spirit can work with people and that people can develop gifts and abilities that God will grant them and develop through that Spirit. These are wonderful attributes, and it's absolutely necessary that we can call on a great power source to be able to help us, because otherwise, how do you carry a message into a hostile society or one that is not always accepting? So, again, we need to appreciate the fact that God is our senior partner, that he is helping us to do a work, and he's not going to abandon or forsake us if we will keep the cobwebs clear, that we will be in communication with him to renew our spirit every day, to be able to have the help that he would want us to have. Something else that was made a famous statement by Mr. Armstrong, who knew more about, I think, doing God's work than anybody. He made the statement that people grow to the extent that their heart is in the work. And I think that's true. And probably you think that's true. When you're praying for all aspects of the work on a regular basis, and you're hoping and you're contributing even monetarily to the end time effort to be reaching people, you realize that this is all encompassing, and when you're involved in it, it can stir you up. And it has stirred up the servants of God that the Bible describes, and I think that we've had the experience at times of being stirred up to hear of good news or developments in other areas, reassuring us that God is intervening, that senior partner is there for us and is able to help us. We need that to be able to do a great work. We need to do that in our own lives to overcome, to be able to have a relationship with God, to get the results that we need for whatever comes up in our lives. Very, very significant. Every cause has a result, and if we want a right result, of course, we want to use the partnership that we have with God. A case in point would be over in the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 6. I'll turn there and use the ESV, English Standard Version, for some of the excerpts that I want to read. In Joshua chapter 6 and verse 1, we pick up the story here. Now Jericho was shut up inside, these are the inhabitants, because the Israelites were coming into the promised land and they were instructed by God to take down the city of Jericho. He was going to help them. So the people could not leave the city because the Israelites had surrounded them. None came in and none went out. Verse 2, and the Lord said to Joshua, "See that I have given Jericho into your hand, with its king and mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all the men of war going around the city once, and you shall do that for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpet, and when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all of the people shall shout with a great shout. And the wall of the city will fall down, and the people shall go up, everyone straight before him." And so Joshua and his staff did as they were instructed, and that's exactly what happened. They blew the horn, and the walls did tumble down. Now, you could stand back and say, well, you know, that is a little bit unusual. There's no precedent for that as far as taking a city, blowing trumpets. And if God can create the universe and he has all power, why would he fool around with a group of people, marching them around a city when he could just take care of it himself in a split second? Why do that? Because he gives his junior partners responsibilities. He gives them things to do. God could do everything himself. He could do an end-time work himself. But as he develops us, the junior partners, we learn lessons along the way. and we start to look at things the way God looks at them and take responsibility for giving the world a message of hope and standing up for God's way of life and for the commandments that God has given to mankind. When we take responsibility and ownership, it develops us. And so God always gives His servants, His junior partners, an opportunity to do something, to participate. So He doesn't do it all for us. But He does allow circumstances to remind us that, hey, it wasn't us that made that happen. A case in point, again, Gideon's army. Only 300 people standing up to the enemy, not 40,000, not 30,000, but a handful. So that when all was said and done, nobody could say, well, you know, we were just so clever. We just outwitted them. We just outsmarted them. You don't do that with 300 people going up against a huge host of enemies. But it didn't matter with God on their side. As long as we give God credit, the senior partner, God, is willing to intervene for us. I can recall one time in a refresher program when one of the key speakers was reciting historically, he said, I can think of three major administrators here in Pasadena that claim, quote, I built the work. He says, Mr. Armstrong wasn't one of them. But what a foolish statement to think. Because unless the Lord build the house, the weary toilers toil in vain. Or the deceived toilers would toil in vain. I can't do anything of any significance without the help of God. John 15:5, you can do nothing without God. The words of Jesus Christ. So with that in mind, let's move over to Joshua chapter 10. Joshua chapter 10, a few pages over, and read of a very unusual circumstance that occurred. Here again, Joshua and the Israelites had their part to play. They were to go through and overthrow the enemy and take over the promised land of Canaan. Chapter 10 and verse 8. We can read as follows. Chapter 10, verse 8 of Joshua. And the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear these people, for I have given them over into your hands. Not a man of them shall stand before you. So Joshua came up upon them suddenly, having marched up all night from Gilgal. And the Lord threw these people, Amorites and Amalekites, threw them into a panic before Israel, who struck them with a blow at Gibeon, and chased them by the ascent of Beth-horon, and struck them as far as Azekah and Makkedah. And they fled before Israel. And while they were going down the ascent of Beth-horon, the Lord threw down large stones from heaven. I would imagine those would be hailstones. And harassed them as far as Azekah, and they died. Notice this. There were more who died because of the hailstones than the sons of Israel killed with the sword. Maybe that being a reminder that as successful as the junior partners were under Joshua, they were nothing to be compared to the great power of God. God could have easily taken care of the entire thing himself. But again, that would be a missed opportunity. Just like a parent raising children. A parent can do everything by oneself, but there's missed opportunity if there isn't time taken to develop the junior partners of the family. So it is that God gave them responsibility in this particular battle. And one thing that I think is quite fascinating is that Joshua had an idea that he offered to the senior partner. He said, I've got an idea. Why don't we have you delay sunset long enough that we can finally vanquish the enemy and get them on the run? Nobody had ever thought of such an idea before, to make the day longer. But it would appear in context when we get a few verses down that this was Joshua's idea. Regardless, it was a supernatural way for the senior partner to be able to underscore the fact that he was giving victory to the Israelites. Verse 12, at that time Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, son, stand still at Gibeon. and moon in the valley of Ajalon, and the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on its enemies. It even makes reference to a book of Jashar that this event was recorded. The sun stopped in the middle midst of the heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day. And there has been no day like it before or since, when the Lord heeded to the voice of man, and for the Lord fought for Israel. That was an incredible victory, and it would have not been possible without divine intervention. God gets the credit. If it failed, then Israel would get the credit for not relying enough on the partnership with God. When we think of the value of supporting what God is trying to do, we appreciate the fact that we can always go to our power source to be able to assure victory. As long as we know where the true will of God is and we're in harmony with that. And we see over in Exodus 17 yet another example of God's intervention as a senior partner, but yet his junior partners having to have a role to play. A role to play. Chapter 17 of Exodus. We go to verse 8. Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." Moses would supervise over the battle. In verse 10, Joshua did as Moses told him, and he fought with Amalek while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. I don't know how long the battle ensued before Moses understood an unusual principle, but it says here, whenever Moses held up his hands, I don't know if it was like this or this way, but whenever he held up his hands, the Israelites prevailed. But whenever he got tired, I guess, or changed posture, lowered his hands, then Amalek prevailed. This was quite a sobering situation because he was starting to realize, if I just drop my hands, my countrymen will be killed out there. God did not need the Israelites to fight the Amalekites, but he gave them a role at this point. And it was so significant that Moses keep his hands up, that God predicated the success of the battle on it. In other words, if he dropped the arms, kept them dropped, people would die. Israelites would die. So he couldn't afford to just ignore the situation. But he actually relied on other junior partners to hold his hands up. And we read here, whenever verse 11, whenever Moses held up his hands, Israel prevailed. When he lowered them, the opposite happened. Verse 12, Moses' hands grew weary. So they, that's Aaron and Hur, took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side, one on the other side. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this as a memorial in a book and recite it in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek under heaven." But also there was a value in writing this as a memorial in a book. This is what the senior partner can do. He can work with us if we will do our part. And part of the part that the Israelites had was to hold up the arms of Moses. We have figuratively described in years gone by holding up the hands of Mr. Armstrong or of other people that have been in administrative supervision at the home office. There are enough people doing enough things that know, hey, we can't do this by ourselves. I'm not an island to myself. I have to renew. We have to renew God's Spirit daily. 2 Corinthians 4. Success is no accident. The lack of success is no surprise. It gets back to using the tools of God's Spirit, as we've already seen from a week ago. It is It's significant to understand that if God is not going to leave us alone, that we have a relationship with Him. Aaron and Hur prevailed as if the successful outcome depended on them. Moses and prayed as if it would all depend on him. And the warriors, the Israelites, fought as if it all depended on them. That's another important principle that we can derive out of studying the relationship of God with His junior partners. And that is that we do work as if it all depended on us. And when you look at the responsibility that Aaron and Hur had, standing all day holding up these arms of Moses, or you consider the fact that the Israelites marched around Jericho, there was a responsibility to uphold. One of the most inspiring examples of faith and a relationship, a confidence in God's willingness to intervene for His people, I think you can find over in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. 2 Chronicles chapter 20. Here we are reading of a time when Judah had been wayward with God. So they had a fairly loyal king, loyal that is to God Himself, Jehoshaphat. But Israel was in a state of drift, and Judah was Judah here was in a state of drift. And so Jehoshaphat realized that Judah was not in the condition that spiritually that he wished that it would be. Regardless, we read the following, verse 1. After this, then the Moabites and the Ammonites, and with some of the Menuhites, it says here, came against Jehoshaphat to battle. Some of the men came and told Jehoshaphat, "A great multitude is coming against you from Edom, from beyond the sea." That would be the Dead Sea. "Behold, they are close near En-Gedi." That would be about 20 miles south of Jerusalem, or 40 miles south of Jerusalem, 20 south of Jericho. Then Jehoshaphat was afraid, and he set his face to the Lord. He knew that they would be under heavy attack and that the future of the kingdom was in doubt. So he went to God and proclaimed a fast throughout all of Judah. Verse 4. And Judah assembled to seek help from the Lord, and from all the cities of Judah they came to seek the Lord. They came to the temple in Jerusalem. And Jehoshaphat stood in the assembly of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Lord before the new court and said in prayer, "O God of our fathers, are you not the God in heaven, you who rule over the kingdoms of nations? In your hand are power and might, so that none is able to withstand you. Did you not go out, our God, and drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and give it forever to the descendants of Abraham, your friend?" I think this is very good psychology, that he's using certain concepts. You know, Father in heaven, your friend Abraham, whom you honored, has descendants that are inheriting this land. They've been here in the land of Canaan, and we've turned it into the kingdom of Israel. You wouldn't want to take that away from Abraham's descendants, would you? Well, no. But God is not mocked. You know, if people are going to drift away, dabble in idolatry, and maybe investigate the gods of Molech and other false icons and idols, they are going to reap a bad result for that. But here it seemed like the Jews were in between. They were doing mostly good things, but they had been apart from God. And Jehoshaphat recognized that was one of the reasons that God was allowing an encroaching army to come and threaten the existence of the kingdom. And so Jehoshaphat is praying a very fervent prayer, and it's well thought out. And he is mentioned in verse 7 that these inhabitants had the land that God Himself had previously intended for Israel to have. So he's bringing this all up in prayer, suggesting that there must be a better way than allowing the Jews to be vanquished by their enemies. Verse 8, "And they have lived it in it, and they have built it for you," talking about the land of Judah, and built for you in it a sanctuary for your name, saying, if disaster comes upon us, the sword, judgment, or pestilence, or famine, we will stand before you in this house, before you, for your name in this house. In other words, we'll put you first, God. We'll cry out to you in our affliction. We will remember the covenant that we had with you from Mount Sinai. We will put you first again in our lives. That was basically the gist of the prayer. You know, forgive us for our shortcomings. We are in crunch time. We will cease to exist because this army is so much greater than us. It's well trained. And here we are with our families, our children, our wives. We're helpless of ourselves. We look to you. And so that was the gist of the prayer. And it was an effective prayer. Verse 11, behold, they reward us by coming to drive us out of your possessions. He makes another point. You know, some of these people, our forefathers, never bothered them, never invaded, never walked through their territory when we came out of Egypt. And now they want to destroy us. That's not right, is it? It was a very, very effective prayer. So verse 12, O our God, will you not execute judgment on them? For we are powerless against this great horde that is coming against us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you. Meanwhile, all Judah stood before the Lord with their little ones, their wives, their children. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jahaziel, and I'll skip the intermediate genealogy. The one, and that person said, listen, all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and King Jehoshaphat, thus saith the Lord, do not be afraid, nor be dismayed at this great horde, for the battle is not yours, but God's. Tomorrow go down against them. Behold, they will come up, and you will find them at the end of the valley. And you will not, verse 17, not need to fight in this battle. Stand firm, hold your position, and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf. I don't know of any words more reassuring when we face a trial, when, as they say in some athletic circles, there are moments where you got to have it, you got to have that last crunch time shot, or that winning goal, that overtime score, whatever. This is crunch time. There are no sweeter words to hear than the words, you will not need to fight this battle. See the salvation of the Lord. See what your senior partner can do on your behalf. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, and the Lord will be with you. And Jehoshaphat bowed his head to the ground, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem fell down before the Lord, worshiping him. Probably it was a spiritual revival of sorts. And they praised him, it says, with a very loud voice. And along with this, they sang hymns. In retrospect, they did have a part to play, the junior partners. They assembled at the temple. They worshiped God. They fasted. They humbly repented. And they sang praises to God. To me, that was quite a reinforcing testimony to the fact that they understood and valued their partnership with God after all. One person that really stands out to me as one that did that time and again because circumstances demanded that was, again, Mr. Herbert Armstrong. I will summarize an event that he records in the autobiography, Volume 2, page 70 and 71. This occurred back in the 1940s when he spent a great deal of time on the road lining up radio stations that he needed to add to the network as far as getting a message out to the nation. And so at one point he went back to one of the flagship stations, WHO in Iowa. And WHO was a 50,000-watt station that could reach virtually every corner of the country. It was very, very prestigious and it was powerful. And it was important to be on that station. And occasionally, his presence would be required where he would have to do on-the-spot broadcasts. So on this one particular occasion in January, during the war, he gave his broadcast. He was tired. He didn't feel up to doing the task, and he knew it. And he just pushed and tried to plod his way through it and tried to throw himself into it as best as he could. And he just felt kind of empty inside. It wasn't what he thought was a good broadcast. What made things worse after it was over was one of the managers came and said, "Mr. Armstrong, do you not realize you just didn't seem to have it tonight? This is not one of your better efforts. May I remind you that WHO is a very important station, and we can't have substandard broadcasting like this." And he was dejected, and he wrote, he said, "I only knew too well that the man was right. But what I lacked in delivery, he made up for in other ways, because he knew that he had a senior partner that was willing to help. He had to go to him time after time." What occurred that night in January, it was extremely cold. Sub-zero temperatures, which makes the atmosphere and the ionosphere much more electric, and it allows for the bouncing and ricocheting of more radio waves. What happened was that became a crystal clear broadcast that reached all 50 states because there were responses from all 50 states. And whereas normally they might be lucky to get 200 pieces of mail from a response from a broadcast like that, they got 2,200 responses. God magnified and made up for what our junior partner didn't have. He didn't have it to give. He had been working. He had been trying. And again, it isn't ultimately us that do the work. It's God through us. God builds the house. With that in mind, to me, I find it encouraging when certain things occur like what happened 10 years ago in the United Kingdom. We ran, as a church, a Reader's Digest ad. We had enough money to cover 1/10 of the British Isles. A mistake was made. They didn't run the ad. So Reader's Digest called somebody up and said, "Look, it's our fault. We're so sorry. But because we made the mistake, if you'll stay with us, can we run that same ad next month, but we'll blanket, we'll use all 10 sections. We'll cover the entire British Isles with that." Okay, sure. What a senior partner can do. There was a case over in Salt Lake City where the church needed, after many years, to relocate to a different hall, hopefully one that would be less expensive, but still centrally located, and would meet all the different criteria. And Rock Corbett, the pastor, said in the announcements, "I want everybody to give me a list of what the criteria should be for our next hall. We'll put it together. We'll form an army out of all of us, junior partners, and we'll scour through the city and see what we can find." So that's what they did, and they looked at about 100 locations. And they came on to settle on one, and it looked promising. And as Mr. Corbett was on his way over to sign the contract, he just felt the urge to stop. He said, "I haven't seen this building before." And so he pulled in and talked to the people, and they said, "Well, we're booked. We can't do anything." "Well, we were looking for something on Saturday." "Oh, really? Well, come to think of it, we're not active on that day." And ultimately, they entered into a contract. And now pay like half the money for something bigger. And what was amazing was that a day later, the management said to our pastor, "We're afraid that you might leave on us, so we want a long-term contract." So they signed an 8-year contract on a place that locked us in at a very low rate. It's amazing what God can do with our money, because it's His, and He's got the power, and He's got the wisdom, the knowledge. We have a man in one of the other Florida congregations. He went down to Suriname to negotiate, wanted to get us on a radio station, and there's a primary station that's all religious. And he thought this would be the easiest opportunity, the most open door. So he went down and he negotiated, or tried. They didn't want to hear it. He left the material. It was a 5-minute presentation from his home office. And they sat on it for almost a week. And when he checked back, they handed it all back to him. And when he opened it up, he realized that they had looked at the website and had done some research. But they were as cold as ice, didn't want anything to do with the church. So he basically went across the street to a secular station, and one that was growing in popularity. It was mainly conservative talk programming and news. And the news broadcast was very, very popular. So he talked to them. And they said at first, look, we don't do religion. You better go to those people over there. No, I think I want to be on your station. And after some more discussion, he says, well, let me talk to my council, my supervisors. I'll be back. He came back and he said, well, we'll let you have it for 1 week. The Holy Week. That's just when Easter Sunday, that's what they called it. Well, it's Days of Unleavened Bread to us. And so he said, I think a lot of people would have said, well, that's great, we'll take it. And he said, and it was going to be free for 1 week. But he said, no, that's not, no, we've got to have more than that. I noticed that every contract you make is for a month, so we want it for a month. So I'll talk it over. Came back, we'll do it for a month, but we can only do it free for 1 week. We never expected to get it for free. And normally it's $35 a minute when we advertise with or work with anybody else, but we'll let you have the whole program for $35 each day. So it worked out for a month in Suriname on a station that's very popular and was able to obtain the time slot just preceding the very important news hour. So that's what can happen when you have a senior partner that can do great things. When you look at the history of the church, the history of Ambassador College, that whole campus is one miracle after another, one divine intervention after another. One of my favorite was the Hewlett-Merritt Mansion. In 1905, that mansion was built at a cost back then of $1.1 million. And Hewlett-Merritt had it. He had a great deal of money because his family inherited the or owned the Mesabi iron ore range in Minnesota. So he had the house for some time and noticed Mr. Armstrong's college kind of mushrooming all the way around his property. He said at one point, over my dead body will you ever get this property? And he died and we got the property. That's right. But when it went up for sale at his death, all of his relatives thought we should put it up for auction. We can get a lot of money out of this. And surely they should have. So they didn't try to directly go through a realtor. And lo and behold, to make a long story short, and it's covered in the autobiography in Volume 2, that virtually nobody else bid on the property. The sale of the property was an amount of money that wouldn't have paid for an iron fence to go all the way around the thing. And it went and sealed bids for approximately $11,000. The church ended up with the property. To me, that's a miracle. That's what we read about in Luke 1, verse 37. It's repeated in Matthew 19:26. Don't turn there, but it says, with God, all things are possible. With a senior partner that takes an interest in us and our needs or the needs of our ordained responsibility to fulfill Matthew 24 and Matthew 28. We reflect that in our seal. And the motto of the church, prepare a people and to preach a gospel. You know, we have to believe that when we need Him, that we have a God that can be a senior partner and make all things possible. If we align our lives in harmony with His will, and we ask for help to do His work through us, then we can expect results to happen. Naaman learned that. Naaman, the one from Syria that was a leper, and he came to Elijah looking for help, and Elisha. At any rate, he was a leper that was told that he could get help if he went to the prophet in Israel. And when he did, he was shocked that the inspired message came back, go into the Jordan River and immerse yourself 7 times. He was upset. Oh, that muddy little dinky river, the Jordan River. Huh. Well, aren't there better rivers in my country? What is this? Am I to be a fool and to follow erroneous instruction? And other people prevailed. Well, you've made it this far. Why don't you try it? And go and do as the prophet said, and then we'll know. If not, maybe we'll take revenge. I'm not sure. So he did. And after the 7th time, of course, we know that he was healed. God did not need to make him go in the water 7 separate times. He could have healed him just that fast. But again, he had a part to play. It's not accidental. A 5 barley loaves and the 2 fishes example with Christ. There was a whole crowd of people that was hungry, and there was not enough food except for the barley loaves and the fish that this child had. And God could have rained down manna from heaven. He could have said, well, then in this case, I can just do everything. But no, he gave the disciples a job to do. Part of the relationship. They had to do their part before God would do his. If they didn't gather the barley loaves and the fish, then he was ready to walk away and say, well, they don't do their part, I won't do mine. So, you know, it is important that we do our part. And it worked. God blessed that effort. He multiplied the food. He can multiply our abilities. And lessons like that that were impressed upon the disciples came in handy later when they preached important messages in the book of Acts and did great works on the behalf representing Jesus Christ and God. They might not have been able to do it with such a comprehensive understanding had they not had the stepping stones of learning along the way. We again teach our children. They grow into autonomous adults. They have to learn. Everybody. We did. And we always will have, spiritually speaking, a part to play. In Revelation chapter 3, in verse 7, we realize that when God does do a great work and does open doors, that when he sets his hand to do something or he promises that something will happen, nobody can override God. And that's the confidence that we can have when we align ourselves with his will and we're in harmony with his thoughts. In Revelation 3 and verse 7, for example, it says, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write," and this is a prophecy that we've been able to see in our lifetime, most of us, "these things says he that is holy and true, that has the key of David, and that he opens and no man shuts, and shuts and no man opens." We have felt that this is a reference to opportunity to preach the message, the end time message of good news and of prophecy of things to come. And we've used this because of a reference over in 1 Corinthians that Paul talked about having an open door to go to Ephesus. And an open door is suggested here, and it's of giving information or walking through doors of media is a way it seems to appear for our time. And in verse 8, it says, "I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. For you have a little strength." And enough can be said about little strength that if the door swings open and God enables us to be successful to walk through it, that we're not going to take personal credit for it. It's what God does. It's his work. But we have a part to play. "So you have a little strength, and you've kept my word and not denied my name." And that's the blessing of doing that, is that we can complete what God would give us to do. That's one of the primary reasons we were called, to help complete an end-time work. We can access God's Holy Spirit to overcome, to develop spiritual gifts, but also we're doing a work. Like a perfect senior partner, God says to us, Hebrews 13:5, "I'll never leave you. I won't forsake you. And if you're in harmony with my will," he says, "I will back you up. I will be there for you. I'll keep the doors open for a sufficient amount of time if you will take advantage of it of the relationship. It's easy for us to get caught up in regular routine activity, maybe different challenges or problems that we face, and forget to take full advantage of the relationship we have with our senior partner. It makes me think of the example of this one couple that lived in the nation of Wales approximately around 1900 when electricity first came to that community. And they just never used the electricity. Months went by, and then some of the representatives of the company came out to this house. And they talked to the couple, and they said, "It doesn't look like from our meters that you ever use this new tool that you've got, this electricity. What's the story here?" "Oh, we use it. Every night we turn the electric light bulb on, and then we find our kerosene lanterns. And then we turn the light bulb off, and then we use the lanterns the rest of the night." So I guess they didn't mind the smell of kerosene in their living room or anything along that line. And then these people said, "Well, you know, you could have an electric ice box. You could have an electric blender. You could have lights in, who knows, all the rooms. Why, you could do so many more things in so many more hours of the day and maybe do them faster." No kidding. They didn't realize that electricity was something that they could really, really use. And spiritually speaking, that would be silly for us to be this close to the end of the age and to think, "Wow, our senior pastor can partner can do so many things for us," and not take advantage of it. Or to come to the end of our lives and say, "Well, yeah, if I'd have only thought about it more, if I'd have made more time for God in my life, maybe I wouldn't be so harassed. Maybe some of the problems that I face would melt away. Maybe I'd have more spiritual energy. I'd have more confidence. Maybe I could help us to do the work even further." It's important, I think, sometimes to look at the historical perspective of the church and history, and again, Mr. Armstrong's life and history. I want to mention a few more things about him. I don't mention Mr. Armstrong because I think he should, quote, rule from the grave, or that he had every last policy right. And if he were still living, he'd be 120 years old today. And he might be upset if he got resurrected to think, "Oh, no." Because he was saying for many years, "You think being old is easy?" He says, "It's hard to get up. It's hard." And they talked about Armstrong extravagance, traveling the world. He says, "That's such a hard hassle." And forgetting what time zone you're in and straddling the world and traveling all the time. In the last years, he was very anemic. He was hard of hearing. He had horrible eyesight. Year before he died, he came to Orlando. All the churches met, and they gave us a gift, some Steuben crystal, a cluster of grapes. And Aaron Dean held that because he says, "What is it?" And he held the grapes right in front of his eyes, this big. And he says, "Grapes, Mr. Armstrong, they're made of Steuben crystal." Really? He couldn't see them. Why do I mention that? Because even at that age, he did not believe in idling and spiritual neutral. At that age, he made the statement, which I've never heard of anybody else at that advanced age. He says, "I have to think that, with God's help, I have to think that I am doing more in these last few years than I've ever done in my life in all the other years," i.e. when he was healthier. Was that really true? Under his watch and directorship, we had the world's largest mass circulation magazine when he made that statement. We had the second most popular telecast religiously, and was fast becoming number one. We were generating, just before his death, up to 200 visit requests in some metropolitan areas of the country. He was establishing personal contact with scores of world leaders, and these things don't normally happen. What other junior partner of God has ever done all of that? That he would not take personal credit for it. I can remember being in his house once and asking, "Well, did you ever envision it to get to this point?" He says, "Oh, no. He says, regionally, yes, I always thought of that. And then, of course, it was going to be California and the Pacific Coast, and then eventually the United States. But he never took credit for it. He says, I'd like to think I had something to do with it. And other times he and others talked about working as if it all depended on them, but knowing it all depended on that senior partner up in heaven that cared more about it than anybody, but would want to predicate success on how much we cared about it. Just like with Aaron and Hur. If they didn't do their job, the Israelites would have been slaughtered. If the Israelites didn't circle Jericho, things wouldn't have happened. If we don't do our part, then the end time efforts to finish the work would not nearly be as successful. It would be a tragedy if we failed to learn from all the successful principles that Mr. Armstrong employed as a, I would call, terrific junior partner. We need not be encumbered in perplexing difficulties or operating maybe on false premises. Well, I think I'm doing everything right. Why is everything wrong? Sometimes we have to go to God and say, to help the work, please, O senior partner, show me your ways and your understanding. Or for my own personal needs, to blow out the cobwebs, to get past certain stubborn trials or whatever that's stymieing me. Help me to live your way, be in harmony with your ways, so that I can be a more successful junior partner with you. We can't underestimate the value of doing that. The stakes are higher than they were when Joshua was trying to take over the promised land or in any other time period of the past. We have the responsibility, as seen already, to help fulfill Matthew 24 and Matthew 28. We have enormous commissions that would take a lifetime to fulfill. It needs all of our creative energy and God's help to multiply whatever it is that we can do. We are junior partners in a partner relationship with God. In conclusion, I'd like for us to turn over to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55 in conclusion. This has many different applications, this passage of Scripture. But I think it's apropos to what we've just examined here this afternoon. Isaiah 55 and verse 11. This is the determination of God. So shall my word be... verse 10. Let's start there. For as the rain comes down and the snow from heaven, and returns not there, but waters the earth, and makes it bring forth and bud, that it might give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes forth out of my mouth, and it shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing wherein I sent it. God is determined to do a work. We can help make that happen. We can yield to God. We can use more of God's Spirit, as we've seen in recent time. And we can try to eliminate the roadblocks that separate us from a stronger relationship with Him so that we can extract more of His power as we move ahead with our activities. So God is willing to do that, and He will one way or another. He guarantees it. Question remains for us. Will we be the most valuable junior partners that we can be in harmony with Him to make that happen?